Test, test. So in relation to seeing is believing, and believing is seeing, and that sort of stuff, the way I look at it is, yeah, no, again, I'm a firm believer of if I see it, maybe that's something. I mean, but I am also of the same opinion as yourself, as the brain is such a crazy organism that, like, is in, you just don't know exactly if you're seeing something, is it for real, or if it's not, or if it's something going on here subconsciously or consciously or whatever. But there is one thing that I experienced when I was younger that I can never explain it. To this day, I can't explain it. When we were kids growing up, we used to go to Mass, and then after Mass, we used to go to this cafe called the Skillet Pot. And whenever we went there, there was always this story. Like, the women used to be like, because the women knew my parents, so they always, the owners knew my parents. And all their staff, they knew us when we were coming in, because we used to go every Sunday. So they knew us as we came in, because it was in our town as well anyway. But they used to always tell us a story, because we were all kids as well, about this teddy bear called Roger. And Roger used to sit up on like this really high bookshelf kind of casing thing, and he used to always just sit up kind of overlooking the cafe. And they used to tell us stories as kids, you know, like that Roger, whenever they finish and close up, Roger comes to life and he goes on adventures and he does all this sort of stuff. Like, he runs around Blessington and he goes off and all these just wild adventures and that sort of stuff. And we used to love these stories when we were kids, because we're like, oh, this is amazing. And then when we used to like go into the cafe the following week, Roger would either not be there or be there. And if he wasn't there, they'd be like, oh, he's gone off on his adventures and he won't be back till like next week, so you have to come back next week and you'll see him. And then we go back next week and he's back on top of the shelf. We're like, oh my God, Roger's back. But anyway, about a year or so later, the Skillet Pot shut, it closed down. And they rang my mom and they were like, look, do they want to take Roger? Because we don't need him anymore. I mean, and I think he needs to go to a good home with kids and stuff. So my mom was like, yeah, perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So what they did was they did this thing where they rang my mom and they're like, okay, so tell the kids that Roger's going to start walking down toward their house and that they have to meet him down at the gate. Because we have a big kind of a hill leading down our house, and then there's obviously our front gate. And so they were like, you're going to meet Roger there. So we were all so excited. We're like, oh my God, we're going to meet Roger down at the gate. And as kids, we walked down to the very gate, and lo and behold, Roger was there just waiting for us. And we were like, oh my God, he walked down from the Skillet Pot to our house. And that was fine. So then we took him in, you know, my elder sister, she kind of minded him and looked after him and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure we still have him, I think. I actually couldn't be sure about that, but I think we do. And she used to look after him and take care of him and stuff. But I remember I was in the kitchen once. It was a really hot summer's day. I was in the kitchen by myself. And in our kitchen, we have a back door that leads out to the back kind of garden. And that was kind of half open and stuff, okay? And this is fully true. I can't explain it. Because it's one of those things, when you're a kid, you don't really think about it that much. You kind of just think, ah, something must have happened there. But when I got older, I kind of realized, what happened? What actually did happen? So I was standing in the kitchen, and then the back door, like, just kind of opened, and Roger just kind of fell in the door. And I kind of walked over, I opened the door, and there was nobody there. Genuinely swear to God, there was nobody around. And I kind of looked, because like, if you saw the layout of our house is quite long. So like, if you look, by the time I got to the door and opened it and looked out, I would have seen somebody there. There's no way someone is that fast or that quick to kind of hide, because there's no places you can really hide. And my house is long. So like, you wouldn't have made it, you know, around the corner of the house. So I opened the door, Roger was there. And I wanted to see who, you know, opened the door and put Roger down in the kitchen. Literally no one was there. And then I was like, I remember as a kid thinking, oh my God, he must have just came back on one of his adventures or something like that. But then I kind of just, because when you're a kid, your imagination runs wild. And I kind of just assumed, yeah, well, that's what happened. I mean, Roger's real. I mean, he comes to life and then he just goes back to being a teddy whenever people are around. But again, I was maybe 10, 15 years later, one day I just thought to myself, that teddy just walked into the door and there was nobody there. Who the hell? And then I, to this day, I've said it to all my siblings, and like no one has any idea what I'm talking about, or no one knows anything about it, because nobody was there. It was only just literally just me. So to this day, I can't explain what happened with that teddy, because I just thought, you know, just it was absolutely just insane and crazy. But anyway, just going back to another thing that we were talking about earlier in relation to like happiness and what things can make you happy and what things can't. I was watching this video of this really famous gambler called Dan Bilzerian. I don't know if you've heard of him, but basically he's made all his money through gambling. So, and he's like a huge hit online. Like apparently I'm not online anymore. So, but I remember when I was on Facebook, he used to always post videos and pictures of himself with like a load of women and, you know, machine guns. And like, he'd be like lying on his bed with a load of women all around on top of like millions of dollars and stuff. Like he's a bit of a pig, a disgusting human being. But they were interviewing him because again, he lives an excessive life. He lives a lifestyle of, you know, sex, money, drugs, alcohol, gambling, all that sort of stuff. You know, he's a big muscly kind of guy and like women lust after him, and he just loves guns and all that sort of stuff. He's just a bit of a seedy dude. But anyway, they were interviewing him because they were talking about how he came to his fortunes and, you know, what it's like to go from literally nothing to having everything. And he was basically talking about, you know, coming from humble beginnings and humble backgrounds, he obviously had such an appreciation for everything and anything that was given to him because he didn't have it. And when he got it, it was like, oh, this is something new. This is great. This is something that I can appreciate in my life. But now that he's a multi-millionaire, I don't know if he looks at it as a regret, but the way he was talking about it, you could see he was saddened by it, which kind of puts things into perspective for you, that like, he talks about like, you know, he gets the best food possible. He goes to the best restaurants ever. You know, he gets the best materialistic items, you know, phones, gadgets, cars, houses, all that sort of stuff he gets. So if someone said to him when he was younger, before he became this millionaire, here's a Ferrari, I want you to have this car and enjoy it, he would be elated, over the moon, ecstatic, just going crazy because he has this car that he's always wanted. Whereas if someone gave him a Ferrari today, he wouldn't give a shit. He'd be like, I mean, it's just another one of the many cars that I have. It comes to food. If someone says to him, you know, oh, this is the best food you'll ever have, this is the best restaurant you'll ever go to, you need to try this place, he's like, I guarantee you it's not, because I've been to the best restaurants, I eat the best food every day, so I don't have an appreciation for what you would deem the best, because I eat the best every day. So it's just going to be another best. It's not going to be like, oh wow, this is the best. Same with a present. Someone gave him a present, he's like, he doesn't have an appreciation for anything anymore, which to me is so sad. Like, I love, you know, looking forward to getting a present on Christmas. I love getting a present on my birthday, or even just getting a random gift off somebody. It's like, oh wow, it, you know, endorphins are going everywhere and all that sort of stuff happens to you. And that's something that you want to keep as a human being. But knowing that this man has everything, and it's come to a point that he doesn't even have everything anymore, but he knows he can get everything. And, you know, spending money to him is nothing. It's boring now. It just seems that it's just one of those things that is a part of his daily life, just as much as it is for us, you know, getting up in the morning and brushing our teeth and going and buying a coffee or going to get lunch in a restaurant or a shop or something. You know, that's just routine. But if we got to go to a Michelin-star restaurant, that's like a treat. That's like something that we can look forward to doing. Or if someone gives me a present of like, oh, if I get Ferrari driving lessons, that'd be deadly, because I mean, I've never driven a Ferrari before, or a Lamborghini or whatever it is. But to him, that doesn't exist anymore. That's not there. And that is definitely something that I don't want to ever lose. But I know it's easy saying it now because I don't have millions. I don't have that sort of stuff. But if someone said to me, you know, tomorrow, these are the winning lottery numbers, so if you write these numbers down, you're going to win millions, I'm obviously going to do it, because it's nice to have the comfort there. But at the same time, it's kind of like a bit of a mind warp, or a bit of a paradox, because like, you don't want to lose kind of that appreciation for just the smaller things in life, I suppose. But also as well, what they also say, what he was even talking about as well, it's not that I don't change. When I get all this money, I don't change. My spending habits change as such. But me my personality doesn't really change, or it hasn't changed. Maybe for other people it does change, but for me it hasn't. But what he was saying was the people around you change. So much so that it's poison. Like, I mean, people expect more off you. People kind of use you for things. You become more of a reliant on other people, whereas you weren't, or people begin to show up in your life that maybe wouldn't show up that often, or wouldn't really have given you the time of day before you had the money. And again, he found that crippling. He found that very just depressing and disturbing, and he didn't like the idea of how just because he has money that people now want to be a part of his life and a part of his being. And again, that's something that for me, I just know, even though it'd be obviously nice to have money and all that sort of stuff and all that crap, but like, again, it's knowing that you have a certain amount that will keep you grounded, keep you humble, keep you kind of at the same shape that you are, and then you still always have these little surprises that come your way in life. And that's what I'm gearing toward. Like, I mean, that's why I'm happy to go down the acting route. I'm happy to be poor. I'm happy to be lacking money if I know I'm doing something that gives me satisfaction and fulfillment. Because then I know that it's obviously something I want to do. If the money's not here, but I'm still happy, I mean, that clearly goes to show you that, yeah, this is obviously something that you want to do and you need to just figure it out. So it's those little things that kind of drive you on and egg you on and gives you a real kind of understanding of, yes, this is what it is for me. So I don't know, that's just kind of his outlook, my outlook, and how they kind of mesh together, and it kind of makes a bit of sense when you kind of weigh everything up and appreciate kind of what you have.